On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys! It's happening! Oh, my God, guys! Oh, my God! I wish you all were here!
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No!
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
Like one third more sports than a normal can.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Tall Can Sports as we inch closer to our 100th episode of this podcast. On Skype with us here today, Nate Sager. And some of you may wonder why Nate is on Skype, as he's typically an in-studio guy with us. But Nate has up and abandoned us and moved to Toronto. How are you doing today, my friend?
All right. It's been a bit of an adjustment moving to the quote-unquote big city. But
yeah,
you know, since I got here, the Cubs have won the World Series, so yay me.
Well, maybe you'll have the same effect on the Leafs.
That's
maybe not.
That game the other night, the one in New Jersey, that was, I felt like, ugh. You ever had that where you're like, you have the TV is on in the background, but every time you look up, you've missed a goal?
Yeah, I do.
That was both Toronto FC on Tuesday and the Leafs on Wednesday were that phenomena.
Well, that was something else,
because
too.
I'm like trying to look up, make jokes. Oh, I bet they gave up. Oh, they already did.
Oh, yes, they did. And I've missed it.
Lost that game like 5-4, I think, right?
Yep. And then the shootout. Yeah. So,
So they tied 4-4.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That TFC game was something else, too. Having to have a stadium full of people wait while you paint the lines onto the fucking turf. What the fuck?
Yeah. The city where Tim Raines played can't lay out white lines properly.
Oh, shit. That's cold, man. I don't know how to segue off of that, so I'm just going to do it.
We'll do a podcast about how it's a travesty that he's not in the Baseball Hall of Fame yet.
It's true, because this is his last time, I think. Yeah, so
he got clean.
Yeah, yeah.
Luck. Anyway, you had to go there
for sure. That's a great line. We got Nate on as our CFL expert. It is, of course, the weekend of the Grey Cup. I think there are large chunks of the country, certainly in Calgary and Ottawa, that are excited. The game is being played in Toronto. Is there any kind of vibe at all that they're about to host the Canadian Football Championship game? Is there any promotion? Is there any sign at all that they're about to host this thing?
Almost absolutely not. Now, granted, maybe I'm not in the right part of town, but I mean, you wouldn't know it from, you haven't seen it. I've seen like one person walking around, as I'm downtown wearing like gear of one of the participating teams, like
right.
One random guy walking down the street with his Stampeders hat and hoodie on, and I think I saw a guy in the subway last night wearing a Red Blacks hat, and that was I think a lot of this, there has been a lot of coverage about how the ticket, the price point was just ridiculous.
Yes.
Right off the hop, you know, the lowest ticket was something like $189. And I also know from talking to friends who have Argo season tickets. I got friends.
Wow. I didn't know anyone had those. Yeah. Wow, man.
Saying that, you know, they didn't start like offering them until, you know, they didn't really start going to the season ticket holders about buying them. And so, and they obviously also the story, but you know, you buy order a pizza, get two Grey Cup tickets.
Oh, the stuff that.
But I mean, this always happens. I mean,
does it? I mean, not in Regina.
Media,
right?
Doesn't really have much of a long-term memory with this. Now, this is only the, third time in the last 20 years they've played the Grey Cup in Toronto.
Yeah, but one of those was only 4 years ago.
Yeah, and that was the 100th Grey Cup.
Right.
We had the Argos get into the game.
And that was a travesty that Toronto hosted that. I mean, I get it's your biggest media market and everything, but a city that's been that indifferent to the CFL for that long.
But it's the city that has hosted the most Grey Cups.
Well, to me, again, then, to me, all the more reason to put it in Regina.
They got lucky with the Argos getting into it, and they also got lucky with the NHL lockout.
Did they get lucky, or did they hand them Ricky Ray the season before?
Ricky Ray for a kicker.
Yes, you create your own luck, I think, is kind of how that works.
Yeah, that was a little bit engineered. Then the other one was 2007, and fortunately Saskatchewan got in it, so that, you know, filled up the building.
Right. It was, well, that's true. I forgot about that one.
Back in 1989, too, it was like, ooh, is this going to be a success? And then all of a sudden Saskatchewan gets in the game, and suddenly, you know, there's 40,000 people all wearing green.
Right.
I really do think, I mean, last year in Winnipeg was about 36,000. I remember people saying in Hamilton back in 1996 that, you know, there was some Tim Hortons promotion where you could get tickets and all of a sudden the place filled up. It tends to be people buy them at decide to go at the last minute. It's not like the Super Bowl where nobody can get a ticket. As long as people come, right?
Yeah, I guess. Whatever gets them in the building.
Yeah.
Let's touch just a little bit on this, because the commissioner spoke yesterday, or maybe it was this morning, I can't remember now, saying that the league's expectations of the Argos at BMO were too high going into the first season, and they have to wear that. Also, they have to wear the fact that they set the ticket prices for the Grey Cup itself too high. We talked a little bit about this at the beginning of the season. What are your, I mean, we're going to get back to the Grey Cup here, but what are your impressions quickly about the Argos at BMO? Is it just an adjustment time right now? Is it too early to call it a bust? I really thought it was going to help quite a bit getting out of the dome, where even if you put 25,000 in the building, it still feels half empty because it is half empty. What are your impressions on the Argos at BMO, you know, after their first season and moving forward?
Yeah, I feel like I thought it would get traction more quickly, but at the same time, we're talking about a franchise that had like a season ticket base of like 3,500, like probably the smallest in the league by a factor of,
yeah,
more than two, possibly three. And you also have to look at where the fan base for the Argos is. I mean, it's people who live out in Ajax or Whitby or Mississauga, you know, the outlying areas around the city.
Right.
And I mean, they had almost been near invisible in the last years at Rogers Center. I think I've told you this story. Like, it's this last year I'm in town and we're meeting some people because we're, you know, buying the guy's Raptors tickets off of him because he has, you know, better seats for this particular game. So we're having a beer at the guy's condo by the ACC, and my friend mentions, hey, the Dallas Stars are also here in town this week. And the guy's girlfriend goes, oh, Dallas Stars, the football team? I didn't think we had football here, because she thinks, you know, Star.
Cowboys.
Star on the Dallas Cowboys helmets. And my friend just gives me this look, and by telepathy, I can tell he's like, don't start talking about the CFL. He's like, don't, that's the apartment fell. That's just an anecdote, obviously. But yeah, I mean, the Argos have kind of been off the radar screen for a lot of people with the other four teams. And
well, I think you could make the argument, right, that the venue is better now, but for those non-downtown people for your Whitbys and your Ajaxes and your Mississaugas. Yeah, when you rolled into Union Station and the dome was right there, that was a selling point, right? I can be there, and once I get off the train, I'm essentially at the stadium, where now I got another bus or, you know, streetcar or whatever it's going to be to get over there.
Yeah, you have the streetcar, or there is a GO train stop right, basically, that...
That's true. Yeah, no, I forgot about that.
I don't know how convenient, but in terms of being as convenient as being right downtown
at Union Station, with the subway right there and everything. Yeah, it's so. I mean, I think the venue is better, but the convenience factor goes down a little. So it's kind of a trade off, I guess. But I don't know what it's going to take to get them rebuilt and popular again.
Yeah, it will be a struggle. I mean, there's always the people who have their NFL badge, you know, like that. Yeah. I think that's the only football that's out there.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if you watch some of the Thursday night games in the NFL, you'll know that there's a lot better football.
True story, man. So,
But I always think that the annual Argos malaise stories, I think they do overshadow the fact that, you know, the product across the league is still fairly strong. I mean, it's just
a
reflection of just sort of the, somehow there is sometimes that's a bit of a schism between Toronto and other areas of Canada.
Yeah. Where people still love the game, love the league. Yeah.
I mean, I've followed the CFL since I was a kid, and I can think of like when, you know, Saskatchewan was holding a telethon just to, you know, keep the franchise going, or
right.
Or, you know, look, or when it looked like the Tiger Cats were going to fold, or when Ottawa did fold, or when Montreal
which
did
time?
Yeah, I mean, the league hasn't had anything like that happen with any one of its other eight franchises in a while. Like, I was looking up just before we started talking, Matt. I was like, well, Montreal's been pretty bad. And I was like, but then I look at the attendance, and they haven't had a crowd of less than 19,000 in the last 3 years, even though they've been mediocre in that time. I mean, that's nowhere. That's down from where they were during the peak of the Anthony Calvillo years.
But sure, yeah.
That still shows there's a core there that are going to support them through, you know, thin and thinner.
Yep, it's true. I think at the beginning of the season, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I know I had said I saw Hamilton-Edmonton as the final. Do you remember what your prediction was before Snap 1?
I think I did say Calgary coming out of the West.
Okay. And Hamilton out of the East.
And if you said Hamilton, that means I probably said Ottawa coming out of the East.
Maybe. I thought I was following your lead on Hamilton. I can't remember.
I might have drank the Hamilton Kool-Aid.
Right. But as we've made our way,
I remember I did think the Red Blacks. I was pretty sure 12-6, their record in 2015,
mm-hmm.
wasn't likely to happen again.
Right.
Just because they had lost a little bit off the defensive line and a little bit off the offensive line.
They battled some injuries early on.
Yeah, they battled injuries. took a while to get the right people in the right places in the defensive secondary because they, you know, moved on from Javon Johnson after last year, you know, perennial all-star cornerback. And
yeah,
had, you know, and then both of their, you know, best DBs they retained, Abdul Kinney and Jarrell Gavins, they were both banged up during the year. And took a while to, you know, get Mitchell White and Jonathan Rose settled on the corners.
Well, and even just figure out who was going to play quarterback, right?
Yeah, that too.
So
Henry Burks only played 7 games. And a lot of the times it was just that they didn't finish drives. But at the start of the playoffs, I know, like, thinking, well, hey, Calgary, Edmonton, like, to have an all-West break up would be really novel, and maybe that would be the, you know, the matchup the casual fan would tune into because it's something that's never been seen before, right?
Yeah. Well, and watching Edmonton come that close to, or walking through the East playoffs again, right? It happens more than it should probably, but it's always fascinating to explain to someone who's not a hardcore CFL fan that yes, Edmonton does in fact belong in the Eastern Final, and that's just how it works. And I thought there was a shot at that, like you going into the Eastern Final, that Edmonton might come out of that, and that it might be good for the league, right, to see that Battle of Alberta kind of thing.
At the same time, at the start of the playoffs, I did think Ottawa probably rated the strongest shot of winning the East.
Right.
Because of the bye week and just because they were starting to get healthy again. Now, I mean, Did the fact that it turned out to be a snow game in the Eastern Final help them out? Probably help them out a little, because they were the team that, you know, played with the lead for the entire game. And when that happens and the other team's got to open up the playbook.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that took John White out of the game, Edmonton's running back, who had just, like, you know, beasted Hamilton in the Eastern semi.
Yeah, exactly.
That certainly, you know, made a difference. Then all of a sudden, Keenan LaFrance comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, you're going, who the hell is this guy? And he's tearing it up.
Early in the season, I can remember being at practice, because it was always like, you know, because of the whole Canadian running back ratio issue. I mean, that's why he doesn't start, because then you'd have to find a really good Canadian backup just in case he went down. So right. It's usually always American starter, Canadian is the change of pace guy. But
right.
There was always a case like, yeah, he could start, but deserving to and being that much, you know, better to justify the, you know, using a national spot at running back is, you know, those are two different things.
But sure. Yeah.
Certainly had a great impact. So, but yeah, I'm pretty sure I liked Calgary coming out of the West. I just thought last year was just, I mean, when the Stampeders have stayed healthy, they've pretty much been the team to beat. Or they only beat themselves, and that's
right.
Pretty been the case for since really 2012, or even going back farther, maybe.
Well, they have looked really good. Before we switch over to them, what is your opinion on this? There seems to be a narrative out there, and I don't think it's necessarily an unfair one, about you mentioned Henry Burris having only played 7 games this year. Has that helped him? Is he a little fresher? He's an older guy. I think he's 41 years old. Do you think that's played into it at all, that's kept him fresh, or do you think it really wouldn't have made much of a difference?
I don't think it would have made much of a difference. I mean, it was just a matter of when he basically like broke the fingertip of his, I think it was like his index finger following through on a pass. He like hit it on a lineman's helmet back in that season opener in Edmonton on June 26th.
And yeah.
Then, lo and behold, you know, Trevor Harris comes in, does really well. I think they were 3-0-1 after 4 games. And then in the 5th game, Harris gets hurt. And then Brock Jensen was the only guy. And so they rushed Burris back, and he wasn't 100% when he came back and played, made a couple of starts in August. And that did affect his accuracy. And I think it really just took until, you know, October for him to really get the hand, to get right with that and be 100%. But at the same time, you sort of, you know, needed them to struggle with Trevor Harris before you could justify making the change. Because, I mean, there's the old, you know, rule of thumb, football starter can't lose the job because of injury. In this case, it was, you know, both starters who had been injured. Right. It wasn't like the passing game was the holding them back. I mean, it was one of the most productive in the league throughout the year. It was just always seemed to be that they were, you know, faced with bad field position a lot, or they, you know, couldn't run the ball at half, you know, making adjustments after halftime always seemed to be a problem for them too. Like they would score 20 in the first half and 3 in the second half. but I mean, that was, you know, that I just remember thinking at the start of the playoffs, I mean, as much as people really love this whole All-West Grey Cup narrative, and I'd love to see it too, but I was like, you know, they did get a bye. They're going to get, you know, people back. They're going to get, you know, the bumps and bruises healed up. And I think the offensive coordinator, Jamie Elizondo, and everybody, I think they're starting to maybe get on the same page. So you could see the breakout potential was there. It's sort of started during that loss to Saskatchewan, the overtime game.
Right.
In early October, and then, because after that they pretty much, you know, when they had all the starters in, they did move the ball well in every game. It was just a matter of, you know, can some of those, you know, drives that finish with 1 or 3 points, i.e. you know, kicking, you know, end up end with touchdowns instead.
It's true. Looking at Calgary a little bit, they have at times almost seemed, maybe as recently as the Western Final, seemed not just good, but dominant when they're rolling. Any question in your mind, is Bo Levi Mitchell the best quarterback in the CFL right now?
I think he's the most consistent good quarterback in the league.
Mm-hmm.
I think in terms of actual total ability, you know, being the total package, I think Jonathan Jennings on BC is better, but he's also 24, and I think Mitchell's 29. Like, Jennings will still – he'll make some throws that make it look like he has blinders on.
Right.
But so, I mean, Mitchell really, you know, he goes out, I mean, and executes week after week, and, you know, put, you know, really makes use of all the different receivers Calgary has, like Tavares Daniels, who got Rookie of the Year last year, basically came in halfway through the year and almost became a 1,000-yard guy. and I also think Mitchell's a little, you know, they always say the better part of valor is discretion. I think Mitchell has that concept down a little bit better than, you know, Mike Riley in Edmonton, who's still a bit of a, you know, the mad bomber type.
Yeah, I'm going for it.
Yeah, he takes a lot of hit. You know, he'll take a lot of hits, and that eventually that there can be a cumulative effect on a quarterback when
sure,
that happens.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not just talking about, like, you know, brain injuries or concussions. Just, you yeah. know, just
hard just on the body.
Hate, yeah, body. Yeah, you're a 210-pound guy getting hit by 240-pound guys who move a lot faster. Yeah. So yeah, I do think there's a combination of things that, you know, make him the most outstanding player in the league. But I think those other two guys, you know, certainly have, you know, their argument for best quarterback. But it's, I guess it's on a particular given day.
What are you going to be watching for in this particular matchup, Ottawa-Calgary? Where do you think this game gets decided? What's an interesting matchup you're looking at?
Well, it'd be interesting to see if Ottawa can get any pressure on Bo Levi Mitchell. I mean, the Red Blacks pass rush, it's last year it was a pretty good one. And then they, you know, because of, you know, trying to of roster management, they moved on from Justin Cavicotti and Sean Lemon. And the pass rush got better, I guess, in pockets toward the end of the season. I think back to the game they had to go into Winnipeg and win. And I think back to last week, they, you know, when they needed it, they were able to, you know, get guys in Mike Riley's face and induce incompletions or get sacks. But I mean, the Calgary offensive line, I mean, that, you know, that's a very, no, I guess they won't have Pierre Laviolette as their center, and he definitely may helps them make a lot of pre-snap adjustments, but mm-hmm. you know, they've been very strong. They gave up hardly, I think they gave up the fewest sacks in the league, and obviously, you know, they also blocked for the leading rusher in the league, Jerome Messam. So yep. Seeing whether Ottawa, you know, the guys like, you know, Zach Evans and Arnaud Gascon-Nadon, who had a great game in the East final, you know, Connor Williams, Moten Hopkins, you know, seeing whether they, how much penetration they can get, I think that's where the game's going to be won or lost. It's probably, if I'm isolating it to one thing, and I guess the other thing is, you know, can Ottawa, you know, make Calgary be a dink and dunk team? You know, Jonathan Rose and Mitchell White against, you know, Tavares Daniels and, yeah. and Lamar Durant, all those really explosive receivers. Can they, you know, can they keep Calgary from having the 30 or 40 yard play and make them go 10 or 15? On the other side of the ball, I mean, probably hasn't gotten a lot of talk, but I mean, in both games that these teams played, the Red Blacks had one half where they could not be stopped. Now, it just so happened it was the first half of the first game, and then I think it became a rain game, and that one back in July, did it
oh,
not?
Oh, that, I believe that's correct. Yeah.
Yeah, and then nobody moved the ball in the second half.
Right.
And the 26-26 tie, and the second game, I think the Red Blacks just got a little bit shell-shocked. They started to make a run in the second half, and then I think Calgary managed to get a couple of, you know, explosion plays and pulled away to win by 25.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, certainly Ottawa's a huge underdog, and, you know, before we started recording, I started thinking, like, you know, what does rank as the biggest upset ever? And, I mean, I think the one I always flash back on is probably 94, because that was the, you know, a BC Lions team that finished third in the West against the Baltimore CFL team, which was, you know, an All-American roster.
Right.
So, oh, I mean, it was a first-year franchise, but it was an All-American roster. And BC, with, you know, the true CFL ratio, managed to beat them. And, you know, I can think back to, like, maybe 2001 when Calgary went in as a sub-500 team that had gotten hot.
That's right.
Yeah, and they beat Winnipeg, which was had a 14-4 regular season. You know, that, you know, if you're, you know, if you factor out the U.S. experiment years,
yeah,
that one's the biggest Grey Cup upset. Marcus Crandall was the quarterback for Calgary that year. Now he's on Ottawa's coaching staff.
I was just trying to think who would have been that quarterback that year. Yeah. That's wild.
Yeah. I don't think Henry Burris was on Calgary at the time. I think he did. He was between stints in Calgary then. Okay. He was with Saskatchewan.
Crazy to think he was in the league back in 2000.
Yeah. Or Burris. Dave Dickinson is Calgary's coach, and Burris used to be his backup. They're certain age.
Man, that's terrible. It sounds like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, that you think if Ottawa's going to win this, it's got to be low scoring.
No, I think they're going to have to. I don't know if you can keep Calgary under 30 points, under 25.
Right.
I mean, I think they're certainly going to, if they win, it'll probably be the type of game where they're going to have to trade points with them early and then, you know, tighten up in the second half, and maybe almost a carbon copy of their game back in July, the 26-26 tie.
And then, just grind it out in the second half kind of thing.
And maybe it'll come down to, like, who gets a big play on special teams. I mean, you can always throw that into the mix. I mean, because that's what happened last week. I mean, with, you know, Tristan Jackson housed that one punt in the middle of the third quarter, and that just made it that much harder on Edmonton to rally.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's almost a flip of the coin, right? Who's going to get one of those out of nowhere kind of thing?
They're both pretty. I mean, the Red Blacks. I mean, they've been interesting study on special teams. It was like, because in 2015 they were kind of bad at it for about 14 games, and then got reasonably competent at it for the last six. And it's a little bit similar this year. There's always the kicking games. Kind of been a moving target from week to week, you know, just because of, you know, punters and kickers getting injured, and, you know, Jackson's been in and out of the lineup as the return specialist. And
well, it seems to be on the kicking side a never ending fucking conveyor belt of guys moving through these positions, right? Like week to week, I don't know who I'm going to see out there.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Calgary, you know, Rennie Paradis is going to kick the field goals, and he never seems to miss. And Rob Mavers, a really good punter.
Right.
And I always look forward to seeing him play, because I'll remember the time he had three returned against him for touchdowns against Queens when he was playing for Guelph in university.
Little personal side to it.
Yeah, especially fun because my boss at the time, he was sitting two rows behind me, and his son was playing for Guelph.
Oh.
And I think after the first two, Guelph was making a run and getting within 7 points, and he was like, "Hey, you nervous?" And I was like, "No, because Jimmy's going to run Jimmy Allen, the Queens player."
Right.
I was like, "Jimmy Allen's going to run the kickoff back for a touchdown," and he did. It was like 105 yards. And then, you know, the game's tied in the last minute, and, you know, Guelph has tied the game in the last minute, and he's like, "Hey, you're nervous now?" And I'm like, "No, you left too much time for the field goal." Like, three passes later, the kicker runs in, boots it through, walk-off win.
Do you get fired the next day, or?
No, I had the day off. I got fired 2 days later. No, I came in 2 days later, and he was just like, "Don't say a word." And I'm like, "Okay.
We've had our fun. This is over."
Yeah.
Say
little when you lose and less when you win.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. Do you have, I think you've been pretty clear here on how you see this maybe going, but do you want to throw a prediction down?
I'm going to say 31-24 Calgary.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Red Blacks cover the spread.
Okay. You got money on it, or?
No. To quote the great Frank Tindall, don't bet on any sport where the ball has points.
Right. That's a good call.
That reminds me of, you're a Simpsons guy. Remember that one where it's like a Thanksgiving episode? And Homer's bouncing Maggie on his knee. And he's like, "See, Maggie, those silver and blue guys are the Dallas Cowboys. They're daddy's favorite team. And he wants them to lose by less than 7.5 points." So yesterday, the Cowboys, and I don't know how often they do this, they wore their dark blue jersey at home, the one they almost never wear, the cursed jersey.
Right.
And they were 7.5 point favorites.
Really?
And they did not cover the spread.
Typical.
So it was like, yeah. This was kind of what I had expected for that game.
Yeah, I guess so.
Washington seems to have covered the spread when they're underdogs, and they don't seem to do it when they're favored. Anyway.
Yeah, you know what? I'll say I was kind of thinking more like a 31-21 kind of thing. But so, I mean, we're close enough. You've got an extra field goal for Ottawa in there. Obviously, I'll be pulling for Ottawa. I'm an Ottawa guy. I know it's kind of a... But sometimes reality is what it is. But anything can happen. That's the beauty of sports, right? So,
No, sir. Yeah.
Anything else you wanted to tee up on this one? I think we've covered a fair bit of ground here on the league and on the Grey Cup.
Well, I will be there providing some coverage for the score. So,
where can we...
If you've got the Score app and just look up their CFL section, you'll find me.
All right. Nate Sager will be working for the Score. You can follow him on Twitter at Nate Sager, which is NaitSayger. We'll make sure that is easily found on our Twitter feeds. We'll make sure everybody can get a handle on Nate, especially on Grey Cup Sunday. Nate, thanks very much for doing this.
No problem, Matt. Thank you.
That's Tall Can Sports, and we will see you all on the next one.
This one's empty. For more, visit tallcanaudio.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook at Tall Can Audio.